Hello and welcome to this new edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast with me, Timothy John, and our special guest, Bjorn Kurt, Britain's newest World Tour rider and the latest to graduate to the professional ranks with the support of the Rainer Foundation. Bjorn, thank you very much indeed for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Three years with DSM, Firmenich, post-NL, World Tour team, you must be delighted.
Yeah, it's always been a dream of mine to turn professional. So to do it so soon is a huge achievement and I'm super pleased.
You've done it in double quick time. This won't be your first experience with that team though. You've been riding with them as a stagiaire since August. How did that come about?
I had quite a bit of success fairly early on in the season. Sort of April time, and a few teams reached out, but DSM really stood out to me, and managed to sort it out from there, and they were keen to get me on board straight away, so managed to start that stagiaire on the 1st of August. So first race was in Norway, and then I proceeded to do a few more.
It's become a bit of a home for young British riders. I spent a week with the team in January, and of course there's Max Poole and Oscar Onley and Sean Flynn and the four guys on the under-23 team. Is it an easy team for a young British rider to assimilate into?
Of course, there's a lot of British talent on that team, something that appealed to me quite a bit. And they've clearly done a really, really good job with those riders. And I hope I've got the same sort of pathway in the future.
How valuable was your period as a stagiaire from your perspective? We tend to think of it, of course, you know, as a period that benefits the team. They get to see the rider close up and decide whether it's somebody who could add value to their organisation. But I guess it's of equal value to you as a rider.
Yeah, no, obviously making that step up is pretty big, especially coming from a fairly lower down team, DM1 in France. So it was sort of a less pressure way of me to sort of take that middle step and head up.
Well, they certainly kept you busy. I think you had four stage races back to back in the short time that you were with them, and clearly you've impressed them during that period. We'll get on to that a bit later. Let's go all the way back to the beginning, Bjorn. I've been trawling British cycling to try and get a handle on your early career, and I see that you sort of got your start in Yorkshire's White Rose Youth League, and we've got a bit of a window on that through Mark Etches, who's become a bit of a friend of the podcast, one of the organizers there. I know that it's, you know, it was the sort of proving ground for Tom Pidcock and Connor Swift, and I guess at your current rate of progress people will soon be saying that it was somewhere that you learned your trade as well. Did it get you off to a good start?
There was always races there, and that's what I, as you said, it's what I started off doing. My dad would take me there on a weekday, usually Wednesday night, and starts off as just good fun racing, but you really develop a passion for it, and you just take it on to the next level after that.
Yeah, was cycling part of your family? Was your dad a rider?
My dad started cycling pretty late, but he was the one that got me into it, and yeah, he'd take me out on weekends, and as I said, take me to the races, and he's been a massive support.
Typically, when I do these interviews, Bjorn, I say to the rider, you know, how popular was cycling in your peer group, and they look back at me sort of a bit shamefaced and say, actually, I was the only kid in the school that was into cycling. I guess in Yorkshire it would be different. Was it a natural thing for a guy of your age to get involved in?
There's certainly a lot of talent around. I think specifically from my school, there's another rider just 1 year older than me, Ben Houlihan. We went to the same school together. He's now outperforming in Spain. So yeah, certainly no shortage of riders.
And no shortage of inspiration. I mean, you had the Grand Depart in 2014, World Championships in 2019. Is that what sort of sparked your interest, or was it something smaller and closer to home?
I started racing obviously when I was 5-6 years old, but I didn't miss the opportunity to go watch the pros race, whether it was the Tour de Yorkshire or Tour de France or World Champs, like you said. It just made me more keen for the sport and more keen to get to that top step.
Yeah, and that very early start, you mentioned it was your dad that got you into it. Was it his intention that you would be a racer, or was, you know, it's simply the best way of acquiring the skills to be a competent cyclist?
I think he was just doing it for fun at the time. And I think his initial attempt was to get one of my sisters onto it. But neither of them seemed too keen, but yeah, as soon as I saw the bike, I fell in love with it. So, and then I suppose it just naturally developed. Quite a competitive person, I'd say. So it didn't take long before I was asking to be taken to races, and yeah, started off from there.
What was that initial appeal? Was it the sort of speed, the freedom, a chance to get a new bike? What sort of lit that fuse for you?
I think all of the above, really. Yeah, love to go fast, love a bit of danger, and yeah, no, it's just, yeah, still I've got the same feeling. It's just fun, and I just love to do it. So
one of the other aspects, I should say, about such a thriving scene in that part of the country are the number of clubs that are up there. You started with East Bradford, you moved on to Shibden, which of course has become pretty much the world's leading junior team on the female side. How did they help you? I see that you rode the Tour of the Basque Country with them.
All the teams that have helped me on my way up, whether it was the smaller like local bike shop that was helping me out to begin with, Cross Tracks, or yeah, All Terrain, and then of course East Bradford, Shibden, they've all played a massive part. When things got a bit more serious was certainly with Shibden. We started doing trips and stuff to Belgium initially when I was doing cyclocross. And then, yeah, of course, in juniors, I had teams like Tafauti and Zappi as well, doing the same thing, you know, doing those European trips and giving British riders a chance to show themselves on the continent.
One of the continuing themes of this podcast is the sort of health of the British domestic road scene. Brother has been a key sponsor for over a decade. Phil Jones, the managing director of the company, was a member of the Elite Road Racing Task Force set up by British Cycling to try and investigate the failing health of the elite road scene in this country. But one of the unqualified success stories has been the junior scene, which is just producing world-class talents hand over fist. How valuable was that to you? You rode the Junior Cycle Classic, you rode the Junior Tour of Yorkshire. Was that valuable, or was it the European programme that you were pursuing with Zappies and with Shibden and others that really pushed you forwards?
I'd say it's quite a bit of a combination of the two. I think it's safe to say the level when you're doing those international races, it's a little bit higher. But like you said, there's a lot of talent in the UK, and again, it's sort of those stepping stones. So doing those races, those nationals, and even, you know, your NatBs and stuff in your more local area, it's a way to sort of progress. And for me, who sort of started doing road racing kind of late, only really started second year junior, a little bit first year, but it's quite nice to not jump straight into the deep end. And I think they sort of prepared me quite well for when those teams gave me the opportunity to go over to France or Belgium or the Netherlands and race there.
Yeah, well, let's come on to discuss that. You were with CC Etoup before this latest step up to DSM Firmenich post-NL. Was it an option to race in the UK to join a team like St Pirin or somebody like that? Or is the scene of a standard now of a status where going abroad seemed like the natural way to progress your career?
I really wanted to do those international races, and France seemed like the best place to do that. And with the interest of CC Etoups, and then of course the support from the Rainer Foundation, it made it possible to go over there, and clearly it's worked out quite well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a big step. I guess you would have been 18 when you began this journey of racing overseas. Did it feel like a big step, or did it feel like a natural progression?
Yeah, I think natural progression, really. I was certainly, yeah, first year under 23 when I head out there, but the team did a really, really good job of putting me in the right races, not necessarily throwing me straight into the biggest races that they do. So I sort of got my chance to perform as a leader in sort of smaller races and then support the team in the bigger ones. And the combination of the two helped me develop and, yeah, get me to where I am now.
And how about on the domestic side? I guess it would have been your first time living away from home, would it?
No strange to travel beforehand, but yeah, living away, but no, we were together as teammates, the foreign riders on the team, we shared an apartment, and it was a real family environment, so it wasn't too much of a change for me.
Were you aware before you joined that it had been Adam Yates' team before he turned professional?
Yes, I was aware of a few of the stars that have been there, but yeah, his name certainly stood out as a British legend, so Yeah,
I mean, that's quite a validation, isn't it, of the club and all that it's achieved, that it could produce a rider of that quality. sort of aside from the racing, what was your sort of biggest takeaway from that first year overseas? I guess you'd have been building life skills as well as skills on the bike.
Yeah, just growing up, I suppose, learning to live on your own. Just doing those things that your parents would normally do for you. But again, the team was super supportive, so I was never really in any difficulty whilst I was out there. And yeah, worst comes to worst, you can always make some scrambled eggs or something. So,
how was your French before you went out there?
Not great. I knew a few words just from being on holiday and racing there, and yeah, got a little bit better. But it's certainly, as far as French teams go, it's really international, and it was quite English was a pretty spoken language in that team, so it was it was good.
Are you sort of cocooned within the world of cycling? You know, you're there primarily as an athlete, or do you have to get on and integrate with wider society? And has that helped you in your development as a rider?
Obviously all those daily tasks outside of cycling, like going to the shops, or if you wanted to go to a restaurant or something, or even when you are riding, you need to ask for directions because you got no idea where you are. It sort of forces your hand, and you do have to integrate a bit. And yeah, I think that helps again when you transfer it over to cycling.
Yeah, it's one of the big goals I know of the Rainer Foundation, that it's producing well-rounded young people rather than professional cyclists. They consider it a bonus when a rider signs a contract, but the ultimate aim is to provide young people with life-changing opportunities, and it's clearly done that for you. You mentioned that, you know, the team has been careful with your development. I think you raced just 17 times last year, a huge step forward this year. Hindsight, of course, is a wonderful thing, but did you know that you were ready to make this step? Had you told the team, look, I'm ready to push on now, this is my time?
I think, yeah, last year it would have been better to race a few more days. I started fairly late due to a bit of illness, and then ended up breaking my collarbone towards the end of the season, so sort of reduced those race days. But no, like I said, they wanted to ease me into it, and the first year was primarily learning, and the second year, straight from the bat, I think my first race weekend, I managed to get myself a top five, and the team sort of saw that. I started working a bit closer in my training with the DS of the team, Melvin Rudier, and they were really good and just kept leveling me up, and yeah, things kept running really smoothly. So
you had a very busy early season program, then you had an overall victory in March at the Boucle de l'Artois. So it was a sort of mutual thing, was it? A sort of virtuous circle where you would be given more opportunities, you'd maximize, and in turn the team would give you more responsibility.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's always, funny enough, you mentioned that race. I wasn't actually supposed to be the leader there. I got myself in a breakaway just to help out the guys behind so they wouldn't have to ride. But in the end, ended up staying away and got myself a podium on that stage. So yeah, things changed. But no, they definitely, there was races where I have to work, those flatter sprint stages and things. But yeah, also days where I've got the full support of the team. So no, it's a good mix.
Yeah, I think if there's one race, Bjorn, that sort of encapsulates this sort of huge step forward that you've taken in the last 12 months, it might be the under 23 Liège-Bastogne-Liège, where you were 69th last year and 9th this year. I mean, are we comparing apples with apples here? Have you just improved by that amount, or were they two very different races?
Well, I think I was quite unprepared for the first one, but nevertheless, I've certainly made a lot of improvements since then. And yeah, I was it was a big focus of mine coming into it this year, and I was really happy to do so well in the end.
What role has the Great Britain team played in your development? Two under 23 Liège-Bastogne-Liège, as we say, you've ridden Tour d'Alsace twice. You were at the Ronde de l'Isard this year. I spoke to Louis Sutton earlier in the year, who was telling me just how valuable the opportunities that he's received from Team GB have been. Have they been of a similar value to you?
I'm yet to race for GB on the road. I have been offered the opportunities, but unfortunately, due to my broken collarbone in May, I had to miss out on the peace race. But otherwise, yeah, no, they have been supportive and offered those opportunities. I'm just yet to take one up, but they've certainly helped out in the past on for cyclocross and for mountain biking. I've represented the nation, so yeah, it's a good support that they've got there.
The Tour of Britain, of course, was a race for DSM, Firmenich, PostNL, and it was a brilliant addition. It was constantly aggressive attacks all the time, very different to what we normally see, which is the sort of doomed television breakaway and then the World Tour teams bringing back the escapees near the finish. When we think about last year, you know, where Visma completely controlled the first five stages, this year could not have been any more different. How was it from inside the race?
Certainly quite tough. It was a really good race and I enjoyed racing on those home roads. Unfortunately, I had a crash on stage two, so added to the difficulty of the race. But no, in the end, the team did a great job, and second on GC was certainly a really nice result to finish off with.
Yeah, did that sort of bring additional pressure? Of course, you had Oscar riding high on GC, his hometown, the opening stage. Were you in the spotlight more than you might have been?
I suppose so, but yeah, no, the team did a really good job to handle that pressure, and it wasn't the first time we've been in that situation. Even for me, at my first race, Kevin Vermarco's third on GC in the white jersey as well, so it wasn't really a new scenario. And yeah, although, you know, it's a smaller scale when I'm doing my own races and for CC Etoupes, when you're in that position, it's, yeah, the same kind of pressure there to hold on to jerseys and perform. So yeah, it's something you get used to as a rider, whatever the level.
How did it feel being back on home roads? It's sort of different perspectives depending on who you speak to. It's a bit of an anomaly, I think, for the established pros to be racing back at home. Obviously, we love it as fans, and the crowds come out in their tens of thousands. What was the experience like from inside the barriers?
Yeah, no, it's certainly something different. It was the first time I've done a race on that scale, obviously, at home. And I really, really enjoyed it. It was just hearing your name being cheered from just random parts of the country. Yeah, it's something you don't get all the time in Europe. So it was a nice homely setting, obviously. So, yeah.
Have any of the other pro races you've done been on a similar scale? I mean, Arctic Race of Norway, I guess, is pretty remote. The Deutschland Tour might be a fair comparison. Are the crowds bigger in Britain, or do we just think of it that way because it's our premier event?
Certainly a lot of people came out in Germany at Deutschland Tour. That was quite cool. With my dad being half German as well, it was sort of a home race away from home. So yeah, it was another really cool event. And yeah, as I said, big crowds. And then in the end in Malaysia, also at the Tour de Langkawi, a lot of people showed out for those. So yeah, no, it's nice to see that spectators are coming out wherever you are.
Great. I mean, it was a really tough schedule, wasn't it? You did the Tour d'Alsace, then the Deutschland Tour, Arctic Race of Norway, Tour of Britain. You must have been feeling it in the legs by the time you got to Langkawi.
Yeah, it was certainly a tough spell of races, but yeah, the team obviously do a great job to help you recover again. And yeah, there was enough time in between those races to reset and get ready for the next one. And I think I was having so much fun anyway, I didn't really notice it too much.
Yeah, I mean, you guys won Langkawi with Max Poole, and it did seem to be like a team gathering momentum towards the end of the season. Is that how it felt from the inside?
Yeah, obviously I sort of jumped in sort of last minute there, but no, from when I started, it really felt like there was a ball rolling, and whatever the race, whether it was the ones that I was at or elsewhere, the team were really picking up results left, right and centre. And yeah, it was quite nice to be a part of.
I mean, you're 20 years old, you now have a 3-year contract with a professional team, and this is rapidly becoming the norm. We're seeing the average age in the peloton fall, and there is this phrase, isn't there, good enough, old enough. I guess that's something you subscribe to, or is it, can it be daunting, can it be pressurized?
No, I think, I feel like I'm ready to step up, and the team believe in me as well, otherwise they wouldn't have given me that opportunity. So yeah, like you said, if you think you've got the ability, and if the team think you do, then you can step up. And yeah, those first races have been quite reassuring. I think with a good winter, with the team's full support, I can be ready for an even better season next year.
How valuable has the Rainer Foundation been in your journey?
Well, immensely. Obviously, as I said, I wouldn't have been able to go out to Etoupes in the first place were it not for them. And then, throughout those 2 years, whilst I've been in France, support, you know, it's been really, really good.
It's been that important, you wouldn't have been able to make this journey without them.
No, yeah. Financially, it's it's something that it's vital for some of those riders. And yeah, for me, it was just putting food on the table, really. So yeah, it's crazy to think that, yeah, were it not for them, I don't think any of this would have been possible. So no, it's a massive thing that they're doing, and I really hope that it keeps going for other riders now, and they can also take those steps up and get to the same level.
Do you have any idea yet what next year will hold, or are these things to be discussed at the first training camp?
Not yet. Don't know yet what races I'll be doing, but most likely some of those Ardennes classics and sort of the races similar to what I've been doing at the end of the season. You know, your hilly stage races and yeah, just whatever they think suited best for me, I think. So I trust their judgment, and I'm sure I'm in good hands.
Yeah. Are you expecting a sort of a mix of sort of under 23 races and pro races, or a sort of unbroken diet of professional races, having proved yourself at that level?
Primarily, I think those professional races, but it would be quite nice to take on a few under 23 races with the development team, perhaps. And yeah, just as a chance to be a bit more of a leader, I suppose, because yeah, as we said, there's a lot of talent on this team. And I think I'm yet to prove I've got the edge on these guys, and yeah, they're certainly at a higher level than me at the moment, so I'm all out to help them. But obviously it's nice to get your own shot at races, more your speed as well.
Absolutely. What about on the domestic side? They of course have the Keep Challenging Centre. Is that where you'll be based to begin with? Have you thought about where you might live?
Yeah, I think I'll be heading off to Spain, Girona, over the winter. But when the season gets going, I'll be at that Keep Challenging Centre, like you said, in Zittard, which I think it's a good place for me to develop. And yeah, the facilities there are brilliant. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, one less thing to worry about as you start this huge step forwards in your career. Well, look, Bjorn, thank you very much indeed for joining us today, and congratulations again on your success with DSM.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.